Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 11:06 a.m. and that is Eastern Summertime. But the U.S. markets are shut today, so I am just recording shortly after the UK close. When we look at what's going on in markets, I think one of the most interesting developments is what's going on in Switzerland. The SMI index has broken up and out of what was a four-year range, and that is a move to a new all-time high. That's against a background where the EU has delegitimized trading in Swiss shares via the SIX index. That's part of an acrimonious dispute, or at least what is being reported in the media as an acrimonious dispute between the EU and Switzerland. Swiss voters are a bit leery of the prospect of dispensing with 120 individual agreements to form an umbrella agreement with the EU, not least because unions in Switzerland are worried that it would depress wages. In the normal course of events, this would be a non-event, but there's an election coming up in Switzerland in October, and the government there is unlikely to want to rock the boat, so that is creating this unease between the EU and Switzerland. The EU and Switzerland have got an enormous amount of cross-border trade. 300,000 people cross the border every day to work in Switzerland and live in EU countries. The EU is Switzerland's biggest trading partner. The banking sector in Switzerland, much like the banking sector in places like Luxembourg or Andorra or Liechtenstein, benefits enormously from its proximity to the EU. And you can make of that what you want. But the reality is that there are clear parallels between the officiousness of the EU in relation to its negotiation stance with its neighbours and Brexit. So that's obviously something that a lot of people in the UK press are focusing on, the parallels between the officiousness and the bureaucratic straitjacket that the EU has tried to form with regard to its trading partners, and the argument about self-determination and freedom that is being purveyed in the UK. But what I thought was particularly interesting is not so much what's going on in the UK, because that has got its own momentum, but rather what's going on in Italy. Because when we look at Italian government bond yields, they have compressed sharply this week. And the reason for that is because the Italian finance minister has acquiesced to the EU's demands, and they are going to fall into line on the fiscal front. Well, that removes a significant risk premium from the Italian market. It also removes a risk premium from the wider European markets. Now, of course, that pays no attention, or really doesn't factor into how people are going to vote, or indeed the sustainability of Salvini's outright attacks on the EU. But what it does do is probably removes a source of uncertainty in the short term. And that suggests that Italian yields are probably going to go back down and at least test the 1% level. That would be an additional significant move from where we are today. But the other point, of course, is that the European Union has demonstrated on successive occasions that the fiscal straitjacket, the regulatory straitjacket, and the threat of, and it is not so much a threat, but the promise that if countries don't play ball, then the EU will make life very difficult for them. That has successfully ensured acquiescence from rest of governments. Well, then we probably should be, I think, learning lessons here, that governments are really only puppets. They're vassal states within an increasingly federalist agenda within the EU. That is where we're heading. In fact, that is the entire purpose of the fiscal austerity regime. It was to ensure that by approximately 2029, that there was going to be a harmonization of debt to GDP ratios. It's at that point that we could see a pan-European fiscal agenda introduced, but perhaps not before that. Now, of course, the problem with that formula is that it pays absolutely no consideration to the feelings of people. And the rise of populism in Europe is a direct response to the unease that many people feel with that entire agenda. It's also a direct response to the lower standards of living that literally millions of people are experiencing as a result of the fiscal austerity. But it's probably good for the bond markets. And it is also, I think, an important factor in the recovery scenario for the euro stocks. What is perhaps, I think, rather interesting is that when we think about the DAX index, it has been outperforming by a considerable margin relative to the EU or to the euro stocks over the course of the last decade. It certainly has lost some of that consistency over the course of the last year, but it is at new recovery highs. We haven't seen it at levels like this since really the beginning of August last year. But the more important point is that it is breaking out to new recovery highs, and then that does represent a more bullish phenomenon. The solving, at least temporarily, of the Italian question is potentially a salve to some of the worries that people have really had with regard to the Eurozone. There is a clear differentiation between the export sector in Europe and the more conventional sectors. So that, I think, is likely to persist. But there is an argument for the domestic market to begin to outperform. The fact that, despite everything that has occurred in Greece over the course of the last decade, and now that it is pushing on to new recovery highs, well, what that suggests is that some of these countries are beginning to recover, that the domestic demand story is beginning to recover. That isn't something that I think is priced into the European markets just yet, but it does suggest that it is more now of a stock picker's market than a something to ignore generally. Now, when we then think about what's going on in China, well, there is an open question about the persistence or the ability of the USA and China to, in fact, come to an agreement. We've seen the trade war ebb and flow, and because of that, investors are a little leery of taking any consideration of the or putting any faith, I think would probably be the best way of thinking about it, in the improving news flow we've seen over the course of the last couple of weeks. The most important thing for the A-share market to do is to continue to find support around the 3,000 level. That is by far the most key level in terms of the performance of that market. When we look at what's going on in Hong Kong, then there are obviously some big questions being asked about self-determination. But again, the most important thing with the market is that it has bounced. The real potential for lower interest rates in the USA, that should be beneficial to the Hong Kong property market. It should also help in terms of liquidity provision. When we then think about the performance of currencies, well, there are supports being removed from the dollar. The EU does not want a stronger currency, and it has been completely inert over the course of the last 3 days. But the much broader consensus here is that the value of assets that cannot simply be printed into existence has popped on the upside over the course of the last couple of months. That's certainly been true of gold, which is now breaking out of a 6-year range. It has also been a significant factor in the outperformance of Bitcoin and its ability to hold a breakout and then confirm support in the region of the psychological 10,000 level. This still looks like a reasonably consistent trend. Gold still looks like a consistent trend and an impressive breakout. Then we've also started to see breakouts in some of the bond proxies. This return to demand dominance in terms of the bond markets is a clear move in terms of people pricing in that we are at the top of the interest rate cycle, that the Federal Reserve, more than any other central bank, has tried to get back to a level where, or at least get back to a normal level in terms of their interest rate policy. What we've seen in Japan was that they never were able to get off the zero bound. In this cycle, it's been Europe. They were unable to get off the zero bound. We have to then ask the question, is it that there is one thing that is common to Japan and Europe and potentially to the USA? Japan's demographics are increasingly aging, and that is obviously a factor in terms of productivity. Europe's demographics are also aging, and now that that profile is catching up with Japan, they haven't been able to raise interest rates. Now the question is, in the next cycle, when interest rates have got back down towards zero, is the USA going to be able to raise interest rates? That, I think, is one of the big questions we need to be asking, because interest rates today are at 2.5%. The bond market is already pricing in that we're going to get an interest rate cut this month. But the bigger, I think, issue is that if we're at the top of the interest rate cycle, and historically, when they have started to cut rates, they have generally shaved about 500 basis points off of the level, then is the terminal value significantly below zero? That's, I think, where we need to start thinking that we haven't exhausted extraordinary measures, but what it does suggest is that we are going to see progressively more extraordinary measures being deployed. That, I think, is by far the more important point here. So, when we think about the outlook for the bond markets, that is why we're starting to see this rally. That's why we're seeing the bond markets, the stock markets, and the collectible assets. Let's simply just differentiate that. Or perhaps the best way to think about gold and Bitcoin is in terms of zero coupon bonds. Because in an environment where we move into negative interest rates, then you get a positive carry on a zero coupon bond. And I think that is what we're now seeing in terms of the pricing in of the various scenarios from central banks. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.